in honor of Ramchandra's appearance, we'll speak something from Lord Ramchandra Rules the World, Canto 9, Chapter 11, Text 23. Purusho Rama Charitam Shravanair Upadarayan Anrisham Shaparo Rajan Karma Bandhair Vimuchate Purusho Rama Charitam Shravanair Upadharayan Anrisham Shaparo Rajan Karma Bandhair Vimuchate. Charitam Shravanaya Upadarayan Anrisham Shaparo Rajan Karma Bandhaya Vimuchate. Purusha Rama Charitam Shravanaya Upadarayan Anrisham Syaparo Rajan Karma Bandhair Vimuchate. Purusho Rama Charitam Shravanair Upadarayan Anrisham Syaparo. Ladies. Purusho Rama Charitam Shravanair Upadarayan Anrisham Syaparo Rajan Karma Bandhair Vimuchate. Purusho Rama Charitam Shravanaya Upadarayan Anrisham Syaparo Rajan Karma Bandhaya Vimuchate. Purusho Rama Charitam Shravanaya Upadarayan Karma Bandhaya Vimuchate. Purushaha. Any person. Rama Charitam. The narration concerning the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Ramachandra. Shravanai. By oral reception. Upadharayan. Simply by this process of hearing. Anrishamsya para becomes completely free from envy. Rajan, O King Parikshit. Karma bandhai, by the bondage of fruitive activities. Vimuchate, one becomes liberated. Translation, O King Parikshit, anyone who orally receives the narrations concerning the characteristics of Lord Ramachandra's pastimes will ultimately be freed from the disease of envy and thus be liberated from the bondage of fruitive activities. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Here, in this material world, everyone is envious of someone else. Even in religious life, it is sometimes found that if one devotee has advanced in spiritual activities, other devotees are envious of him. Such envious devotees are not completely freed from the bondage of birth and death. As long as one is not completely free from the cause of birth and death, one cannot enter the Sanatana Dham, or the eternal pastimes of the Lord. One becomes envious because of being influenced by the designation of the body. But the liberated devotee has nothing to do with the body, and therefore he is completely on the transcendental platform. A devotee is never envious of anyone, even his enemy, because the devotee knows that the Lord is his supreme protector. He thinks, what harm can the so-called enemy do? Thus, a devotee is confident about his protection. The Lord says, Yeyatamam prapadyante tang sadaiva bhajamyaham, according to the purport quote translation, according to the proportion of one's surrender unto me, I respond accordingly. Unquote. A devotee must, therefore, be completely free from envy, especially of other devotees. To envy other devotees is a great offense, a Vaishnavaparad. A devotee who constantly engages in hearing and chanting, Shravana Kirtana, is certainly freed from the disease of envy. And thus he becomes eligible to go back home, back to Godhead. So now we know what to do on Ram Navami, right? Purusho Rama Charitam Shravanayar Upadharayan Anrishamsya Paro Rajan Karma Bandhair Vimuchate. O King Parikshit, anyone who orally receives the narrations concerning the characteristics of Lord Ramachandra's pastimes will ultimately be freed from the disease of envy and thus be liberated from the bondage of fruitive activities. One of the students yesterday at the college program was asking, why do we fast on the appearance days of the Lord? The instruction that Prabhupada gave was, on such auspicious days, one tries to diminish demands of the body and increase instead in its place attentive hearing and chanting to perform tapo divyam, transcendental austerity, and that tapo divyam includes hearing. When Lord Brahma heard the syllables tapa, 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 it's for us too. it's an instruction. You're inquisitive about who you are, your purpose of existence, and what you're to do, tapa. Because through that tapa, control of the... So he went back to the lotus flower and did his tapa to qualify him to then, in the Sri Brahma Samhita describes, he then received some instruction. So to qualify us to receive some instruction, we get lots of instructions we don't receive. But it's the ones that we receive that will be most beneficial. And through tapo devyam, transcendental tapa, this is Rishabhdev, we're reading in the regular morning class about Rishabhdev. That's his instruction. Putrakayena satvam shudhyat, makes one's existence pure. And then when we, so Saraswati, not the goddess of learning Saraswati, but a direct expansion of the internal potency of the Lord. she instructed Brahma, take this sound vibration. She gave him a mantra, Gopal mantra. And by chanting this mantra, all the things that you desire will be fulfilled. You better be careful what you desire. But the heart's ultimate desire is to be with our lovable master. In this case, Lord Ramachandra, for the reference in this purport is being made to the Sanatan Dham, which relates to the previous verse. I mean, the two verses are tied together. Text 22 reads, Lord Ramachandra returned to his abode, to which bhakti yogis are promoted. This is the place to which all the inhabitants of Ayodhya went after they served the Lord in his manifest pastimes by offering his obeisances, by offering him obeisances, touching his lotus feet, fully observing him as a father-like king, sitting or lying down with him like equals, or even just accompanying him. So something about Lord Ramachandra revealed in this previous verse is there are loving exchanges with Lord Ramachandra that are beyond the level of exchanges in Vaikuntha. Meaning, there's an intimacy in affection with Ramachandra that one will not find in Vaikuntha, because Vaikuntha, the mood is very strong, Aishwarya, which is, it's conducive to a particular type of love. In Brihat Bhagavatamrita, it delineates in the conversations with Gopal Kumar, that the realm of Ayodhya is above the realm of Vaikuntha, but it's before Goloka Vrindavan. So the distinction between Vaikuntha and Ayodhya is this intimacy. We don't find residents of Vaikuntha sitting or lying down with him like equals. It's not equals. So Ramchandra is also, he's like the father to all the citizens. But his demeanor is very welcoming to such a degree that, well, in many ways, he takes a subordinate position, like Krishna does. He takes a subordinate position or an equal position. There's the intimacy diminishes the on reverence, or it eclipses the on reverence to allow for greater degrees of intimacy. And in Goloka Vrindavan, there is intimacy. Madhurya is so strong that the residents of Vrindavan don't see him as the majestic father. He's a little cowherd boy who's our dear friend or the beloved of our eyes and our hearts, the Madhurya Rasa, or little boy. So there's Madhurya also in the pastimes of Ram, where he appears as a small child. We don't have that in Vaikuntha. You're not a small child in Vaikuntha. He's the majestic Lord. So it's in terms of rasa, it's above Vaikuntha. And it's the gateway to Goloka Vrindavan. And the residents of Ayodhya on earth, when the pastimes of Ram were completed, they attained his abode. 60,000 pure devotees. And we know what it was like to have one pure devotee. There was Srila Prabhupada present on earth. 60,000 ascended to Ayodhya with Lord Ram when he returned. Except for one. Hanuman. He was given a service to remain behind and propagate the glories of Lord Ramachandra. And Hanuman just loves service. But anyone who loves service also likes service in union, not just all the time service in separation, at least sometimes service. So his service in union was made possible just by hearing. So he was, Hanuman, steeped, absorbed in hearing and remembering and reciting the glories of Ram. And those who are Ram Bhaktas can also be absorbed in Ram by hearing, chanting, and remembering. Shrotavya kirtitavyascha dyeya pujascha nityada. So this verse is saying, Shravanayar, by the process of hearing, by oral reception, Upadharayan, simply, doesn't require a big ritual. It's a very simple process. Upadharayan, simply by this. Shravanam, Shravanayar. One becomes completely free from envy. On Rishamsha Paro Rajan, the contamination of envy is removed. Try to get rid of envy some other way. I mean, I'm not advocating it, but if one does try to do that, you'll find that you can't get free from it that way. So whatever the other ways, way or ways. There are ways to, like antidotes that minimize or reduce the influence of envy, but it doesn't remove it from the heart, except for this one, because the removal of envy from the heart starts, or the presence of envy in the heart starts with envy towards the personality of Godhead, and then in turn envy towards others who are bearing some of the opulence of the personality of Godhead, maybe a fragmental speck, but envy towards the person is indicative of a primordial envy towards the personality of Godhead. That's clear, right? Envy towards others indicates envy towards the source of those others, whatever it is that those others have that one is envious of. It's envy of the personality of Godhead. So that envy can be rooted out by this very simple process. Hearing the glories of the Lord. Rama Charitam. Narrations concerning the characteristics of Lord Ramachandra's pastimes. Lord Ramachandra's pastimes are filled with the most exalted virtue. Most exalted virtue. Again and again and again and again. Anyone who has spent time reading Ramayana knows what I'm speaking about. It's just hearing it. It lifts one to the realm of, at least, contemplating virtue. resonating with virtue, becoming virtuous. In a standard that is transcendental. You know, the virtue of minus transcendental virtue, it's like a Boy Scout or something. Be truthful, friendly, cheerful, reverent, brave, clean, and something else. You know, just be virtuous. But what does that mean? And do Boy Scouts emblemize virtue? But Ramchandra emblemizes virtue. And hearing about Ramchandra does something that hearing about a Boy Scout isn't going to do. It's transcendental. Transcendental. And that transcendental vibration, hearing of these Rama Charitam, the transcendental characteristics of his pastimes, it carries one to this transcendental virtuous position, where affection and affinity and attraction for the personality of Godhead awakens, thus diminishing envy, and then an envy in the world. It's like it's a panacea for Kali Yuga, because Kali Yuga is based on uncontrollable quarrel and strife between a person and person, family member and family member, one group and another group, one nation and another nation, and so on. One tribe and another tribe. I don't know so much about it, but hearing a little bit from Bhakti Tirtha Swami, it's risk your life. He was describing once when he was asked, they wanted to make him a king in some tribe. And he knew what that meant. It meant like he'd be the target for the opposing tribes to get his head. So it's like it's really risky. What are you going to do? If you're not part of a tribe, then you're chopped. And if you're part of a tribe, you're chopped. So what do? Be transcendental. You know, don't stay too long in Africa. That's kind of part of what he decided. You make, like, you know, visits and do things and then go somewhere else for a while. So, envy, Prabhupada explicitly says, one becomes envious because of being influenced by the designation of the body. Groupism, tribalism, you know, this community, that community. I'll share something nice. It's like a little bit over here on the side, but yesterday, I think it was yesterday, my days are blurred, it was yesterday, I think it was yesterday. Yesterday I met with the Chinese students that have been interning under some program at Illinois Institute of Technology. It's called, it has an acronym, ACL or ALC or something. It's where foreign students are enrolled in the institute, the college, and there's a program for them if they want to intern, get a sense of how things work in America. Because they've come to America to study because the system of study is valued, and they also want to get a sense of like how it works. How's the internal processing, not just the IB Tower part, but on the ground part. What is it, how does it work? So some students signed up, and Avello, knowing how the university works, approached the business school and said, I have a project that some people in marketing can take part in. They can market Krishna consciousness. And I'm paraphrasing here, but the man said, oh, that sounds very creative. I'll see if there's some people interested. And people didn't know what they were signing up for, and they signed up for it. And then when they found out what it was, they shared. So this is after 1 year. They shared what they learned, what their experience was. And there were four interns plus their friends. So they shared two of them. The first was an uh-oh experience. Uh-oh. This is a religion. And I know what religions do. They try to, like, grab a hold of you and make you part of their religion. So they didn't want to, they didn't say no, but they didn't participate. So Avella worked all that out, said, no, it's not like that. This is marketing. Marketing. And their report was about the marketing. You know, they were standing at the door, those that live here know that, you know, the giant Vijay program. And then they were videoing people, you know, devotees, and they worked in the gift shop, and they did the Krishna lunch program. They volunteered to, like, market Krishna lunch, and they were saying, I'm really shy, I didn't know what to do, but once I got into it, it was fun. And you remember some of them? Rasika Manjari? Once or twice. Okay. Well, the main thing that they spoke about was their apprehension barrier broke down when they came to the temple and they experienced, you know, uniformly they said, energetic. You know, the kirtan. I guess they're not used to seeing what we do during kirtan and Sunday program. Not too many people are. And then they said different words, but, like, you know, there's so much diversification. That was the word. There's so many different types of people. You know, the Spanish people, the Russian people, the American people, the Indian people, some of us Chinese people, and some Polish people, and some, you know, just like the variety. And everybody, three of them said, like a family. Like everybody treated everybody like their family members. And I kept my mouth shut, but, you know, get a little closer, you can see some other things besides everyone treats everybody like family. But that was their impression, which was, it was encouraging, because I've heard other things from people that come to temples, not just this temple, and their first impression isn't what they described. And just, this is even more remote, but their understanding of what Krishna consciousness is was absent. I mean, what they understood, they didn't understand, one got it. Well, maybe one and a half. But what it told me is, when we have our Sunday program, we have to be tuned into the fact that there's new people, and our speaking needs to be according to new people. And, you know, the people that have come forever, they probably need it too, but some of them do. But, you know, what are people going to understand about what our movement is, what our message is, if it's either too high or too abstract or something? Anyway, just get back to our Ramchandra. Those who are in the bodily conception of life, from that it flows, there will be envy or groupism, this group, that group. So one of the ways to transcend groupism is stop identifying with the body. Our group, their group, us and them. It inhibits the mood of bhakti. It inhibits our ability, what's being said here specifically, it inhibits one's ability to go back to Godhead. And those that did go back to Godhead from the previous verse, they went to the planet of the Bhakti Yogis. Ramchandra went and took them with him, and that's what they do, Bhakti Yoga. That's not, you know, without material bodies. The description of Ayodhya, so just like there's, you say, Goloka and Gokula. Goloka referring to Krishna's abode in the spiritual sky. And Gokula refers to Krishna's place of pastimes in Boma Vrindavan, the worldly realm. Just as there's Goloka and Gokula, there's also Ayodhya in the spiritual realm, as there is Ayodhya in the earthly realm. And they are not different, which means that Dasarath is there in Ayodhya, just as Mother Yasoda and Nanda Maharaj. They're eternal associates of Lord Ram. And as he descends, they descend, or expansions of them descend, and perform pastimes with Lord Ram for his pleasure. And when they returned in their same forms, because their spiritual identity. It's not like they assumed a four-armed Vaikuntha form. So the whole entourage of Lord Ram, the monkeys and the whole program, they exist in the spiritual world, and they're transcendental associates. And Ram accepts the service of them because of their love for him. And by that acceptance of service, one becomes eligible for the spiritual kingdom. And in that spiritual kingdom, the two points that are made in this verse, Anrishamsya paro, envy is eliminated, and karma bandhai vimuchate, one becomes freed from the bondage of karma. So one can perform all these wonderful activities in service to Lord Ramachandra, or within our lives, one can serve the personality of Godhead. The starting point of that is hearing. Chindanti kovidas tasyat. That the sword of the sound vibration of the glories of the personality of Godhead cuts the knot of material affinity. The potency is there, the capacity is there, depending or proportionate to the quality of our hearing, and the quality of our hearing will also then determine how much freed we become from the bodily conception of life and calculating things in terms of sense gratification and bodily enjoyment and position and glory and honor and recognition and all of that contamination, and instead simply serving the personality of Godhead. What was that? Oh. Simply serving the personality of Godhead through the process of hearing. So, hopefully there'll be time in your schedule today, especially on the appearance days of the Lord, or Ekadasis, those special sacred days. They're for increasing our hearing and chanting. So we do hearing and chanting every day, and this is a day for increasing hearing and chanting, and especially auspicious is to hear and chant about the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra. And specifically here, the transcendental characteristics of his pastimes. So not just hearing the pastimes, but catching hold of his virtue, for example. I'll just go back one more verse and Shukadev Goswami, after hearing, Maharaj Parikshit inquired from Shukadev Goswami, how did Lord Ramchandra conduct himself? And how did he behave in relationship with his brothers, who were expansions of his own self? And how did his brothers and the inhabitants of Ayodhya treat him? This is, you know, like pursuing this Ramcharitam, the transcendental characteristics of him and his loving exchanges with others. Maharaj Parikshit is expert. Keep the conversation going. He asks specific to this, because this Ramcharitam can produce the other. So he wants to hear Ramcharitam. Shukadev Goswami replied, after accepting the throne of the government, by the fervent request of his younger brother, Bharata, Lord Ramachandra ordered his younger brothers to go out and conquer the entire world. I want a bigger kingdom. That wasn't it. While he personally remained in the capital to give audience to all the citizens and residents of the palace and supervise the government affairs, with his other assistants. Just long purport, but I'll read short paragraph. The personality of Godhead does not allow any of his devotees or assistants to be engaged in sense gratification. The younger brothers of Lord Ramachandra were at home, enjoying the personal presence of the personality of Godhead, but the Lord ordered them to go out and achieve victory over all the world. It was the custom, and this custom in some places is still current, that all other kings would have to accept the supremacy of the emperor. If the king of a small state did not accept the emperor's supremacy, there would be a fight, and the king of the small state would be obliged to accept the emperor as the supreme. Otherwise, it would not be possible for the emperor to rule the country. Lord Ramachandra showed his favor to his brothers by ordering them to go out. Then he speaks, many of the Lord's devotees residing in Vrindavan have taken the vow to not leave Vrindavan to preach Krishna consciousness. But the Lord says that Krishna consciousness should be spread all over the world, in every town, in every village. This is the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Prabhupada is like our Lord Ramachandra. He would engage those who wanted his association. Anyway, just Prabhupada appreciation. A few devotees who had Prabhupada's association described how Prabhupada would do like that. And just one of them is Ridai Nandamarsh. Prabhupada was made his headquarters, at least in the West, in Los Angeles. So many devotees would go to Los Angeles. And Ridai Nandamarsh described that he would kind of go and just hang out to get Prabhupada's association. And Prabhupada would look at him and say, what are you doing here? Well, I came to get your association. Very nice. You can stay for 3 days and then you go back to South America. And others. Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Harikesh would describe, and when Prabhupada asked them to go preach, it was devastation. Because they wanted Prabhupada's association, but he was, it for their benefit. And for the benefit of others, just as he had been sent by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So I thought, if we have a little time, I could describe one pastime like that. That's while Ram was ruling in Ayodhya. First, again, this Ram Charitam is the theme. As was the practice for exalted kings, there were certain times during the course of a week or a day when any citizen with any problem could directly come and speak to the king. Now, what would that be like if the mayor of Chicago had that policy? Or any other government officer? But this was how incredibly peaceful and nice was the kingdom, is when Ram would leave that time open, nobody would come. Because everyone was happy. Not like this, we don't want to bother him with our petty things. They just didn't have petty things. The description in Valmiki Ramayana is, one time a dog came to the gate and the guard said, "Go away. You're a dog." He said, the dog spoke, by the way. The dog said, I want to see the king. You know, get away. I want to see the king. You go ask the king if he'll see me. It's all right, I'll send a messenger. You just stay here. Woof, woof. So Ram said, immediately, bring him. So he brought the dog. And see if I can remember this, because it's very intricate. The dog said, the dog had mangled face and broken features, parts of his face were broken, and so he said, "I have a complaint. There's a priest in one of the temples, and he beat me so severely. I look like this. Something should be done. It's not right. A priest shouldn't just beat a dog. Even I'm a dog. It can't do that." So Ram requested someone to fetch the priest, bring him before the court, before the royal assembly. And the priest came. And I may be getting some of the details wrong, but it's something like this. Ram asked the priest, did this happen? And the priest, because I'm a Brahmin, I have to say, it's true. But, you know, here are the circumstances. And I've just been through this one series of difficulties after the next. And that particular day, I was going out performing Madhukari from the temple on behalf of the Lord. And everyone treated me so dismissively that it just, the whole day went like that. So by the end of the day, I saw the dog and I just took out my frustration on the dog and I let him have it and kicked him and beat him and mangled him. So I admit having done the wrong. You're the king. You may punish me as you like. And Ram turned to his brothers and said, "What should be the proper punishment?" And they said, "The dog should decide what should be the proper punishment." So Ram said, "This is very good." And he requested the dog to decide. And the dog said that he should be made the head priest of that temple. And everyone was astonished. But Ram said, "So be it. You're the head priest of the temple. I'll make all the arrangements." And then there was some conversation that said, you know, "What's going on? What's going on? Why did he say that?" So the dog was asked for an explanation. And he said, in my previous life, I was the head priest of that temple. And because of thy position of being the head priest of the temple, I was very proud. And because I was very, because pride was in my heart, I did many cruel things to many people out of pride. And in this way, I've become a dog. And I've been now beaten and mangled by this priest. It's only just deserved for my wrongs. So if the Brahmin, if the priest, has understood the wrong that he's done and his heart is corrected, he can become the head priest and not become proud. But if he hasn't, then he'll follow the same path and end up becoming a dog, like me. But no, it's in his hand rather than me judge him. It's in his hand. He can go up or go down. And everyone appreciated the wisdom of that decision. Then, some time passed, another day, a group of sages came from Madhupuri. Madhupuri is a name of Madhuvan. Madhuvan is one of the forests in Vrindavan. And I forget the name of the sage, and his associates came to see Ram and let them know that there's this terrible Rakshasa demon named Lavanasura, and he's making it impossible for us as sages. Our life is at risk, and you've defeated so many such Rakshasa demons in your time in the Dandak forest. So therefore, we've come to you and ask you, please correct the situation. Use your Kshatriya skill. Somehow give us protection. So, Ram acknowledged their request, and then he asked a pertinent question. He said, in order to understand how to deal with an aggressor, one needs to know their strength. Can you give some description of the strength? Now, I can't remember the description, the detail of the description. But he something like, there was another demon who heard that Lavanasura was very powerful, and he came to the gate of his palace and he challenged him, and Lavanasura picked up this demon and tossed him miles and smashed him and pulverized him and something. No. Lavanasura went to he went to the demigods and challenged the demigods, and the demigod said, "Oh, you're so powerful. We're no match for you. But if you want to know who's a match for you, they gave somebody that's a match for you." And so he went to that someone and pulverized them. Something I forget exactly, and he defeated their entire army and single-handedly, and he's like this big monster person, very, very powerful. So Ram, and oh yeah, he got his power from his father. Yes, he said his father was named Madhu. His Madhu was a demon, as was Lavana, but his Madhu was a different kind of demon. Madhu was very well disposed to the demigods, and in many ways he just served them and respected them and honored them, and so much so that Lord Shiva came before him and offered him a gift. His gift was an expansion of his trident. So, and he said, with this trident, you will be able to destroy any enemy. No one can harm you. Always keep it by your side. And when you release it, it will destroy your enemy and come back in your hand. You're invincible. So Madhu used it properly, but he had a son who was the other type of personality. And as much as Madhu tried to correct his son, he was incorrigible. So he, out of disgust, he left his kingdom, turned the kingdom over to his son, and including he gave the trident to his son. So his son's now an invincible demon. Already very, very powerful. And the advice was, if you engage in combat with him, make sure he doesn't have his trident in his hand, because he's invincible. So the stage was set, and Ram said, very well, which of you brothers would like to do the service? And Lakshman was up first. Let me go. And Shatrughna said, let me go. And then older than Shatrughna was Lakshman. Lakshman said, I'd like to go. I'd like to do this service for Ram. And Ram said, well, Shatrughna spoke first. He said, oh, I'm proud. I was just feeling Lakshman, he got to be with you all the time, and Bharata was serving as the king, and I don't get to do anything. So I was thinking it'd be nice if I could do something. But that's just my pride, and Bharat or Lakshman should do. So Ram said, no, you do. You spoke first, and you're well suited for this engagement, so, but you have to prepare yourself, because this is not an ordinary foe. So that preparation was made. Ram coronated him as king of Madhupuri, and Shatrughna went with a grand celebration. Ram gave him a special mantras and a special sword and special this and special that, so he would be able to defeat. He just gave him this caution. When you approach, don't approach him when he can have the trident in his hand, because it may be very difficult to defeat him. So he went. He went to, on his way, he stopped at Valmiki's hermitage, and there he saw the birth of Love and Kush and the ceremony that was performed. And then he went, and he waited some distance because it wasn't the right season to go, and he waited for the right season, and then he crossed the Jamuna River alone without his army, because his army was waiting, and he called out, it was the morning hour, and Lavana had gone to gather his breakfast. So he had a long spear, and on his long spear was all these bodies of tigers and deer and elephant heads, and he had a big appetite. And they all blood dripping down and coming back, boom, boom, boom. Yeah, he's a monster. And here is Shatrughna brandishing his sword saying, fight me and I will destroy you. You're a wicked demon. And Lavana just laughed and said, you're just this little tiny creature. You'll fit very nicely on my big spear here. But one moment, let me go inside and gather my weapons. And Shatrughna said, you're just a coward. You're running inside your palace out of fear of me. Stand and fight like a man. Which infuriated Lavanasura, so he put his bloody spear down and started combat, and Shatrughna was, you know, very expert with his sword, very powerful sword, and they fought some time. Lavana knocked with a tree trunk or something, knocked Shatrughna to the ground, and he thought he was dead. So Lavana went to, you know, get his breakfast kettle ready. That was his, you know, his catch. Shatrughna woke and became externally conscious again, and at just as Lavana was about to enter into the palace, he called him and called him something, you know, some heroic words and chivalrous speech, and Lavana came charging at him and he finished him. And when he finished him, everyone, the sages certainly were very, very happy. And Shatrughna stayed in the palace that was built by Lavana's father, Madhu, and he stayed there to just like right the situation, because everything had been corrupted for his whole lifetime. It took some while to put it back in order, and he was already anointed as the king. So he stayed there for 1 year. And after 1 year, he had his, you know, people set up to run the city, and everything became very nice because it was Vrindavan. And then he was very much missing Ram. So he put some of his ministers in charge of the kingdom so he could go back to Ayodhya, visit Ram after 1 year. And visiting Ram, Ram was very happy. Everyone was very happy to see him. He stayed for some time. And Ram told him, you have to go back. It's like it's describing here. Because you're the king, and the kingdom needs a qualified king. And this is your service. You can serve me in separation. And, of course, he didn't want to serve in separation, but Ram was ordering him, so he went back and remained there. So those of you that may visit Vrindavan, you may want, especially with Dinabandhu, you may want to go to Madhuvan. And Madhuvan happens to be a place where also Dhruva Maharaj performed his austerities, in Dhruva Tila. It's also in Madhuvan. And some other very nice pastimes. But there's a little temple, a Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman temple, where in Madhuvan, Shatrughna is said to have stayed. So the place is there, the pastime took place there. There was at once a big city in Madhuvan. Now it's not a big city anymore. It was quite some time ago. So in the course of the whole narration, there's a connection between Vrindavan and the other dhams, like Ayodhya, a transcendental connection that's eternal, it's in spiritual. And so it was fitting for Shatrughna to reside there and preside there and rule there and establish the virtue of Ram during his pastimes in Vrindavan. So I'm sure I got some of the details not exactly right in that narration, but basic storyline is there. That just is one of the characteristics of Ram. He didn't allow his brothers just to stay in luxury and comfort, and their own happiness was not the plan of Ram. The well-being of the citizens and giving protection to others and establishing the standards of virtue throughout the land. That's Lord Ramachandra. Any discussion? Yes. Why don't you go ahead without the microphone? About? Humility.
I've seen pictures of Lord Ram worshiping Lord Shiva. Is it out of humility that Lord Ram worships Lord Shiva? And why would Shiva allow himself to be worshipped by Lord Ram?
I've heard the first part of the question asked at least 100 times, but the second part has never been asked. But the second part is, Lord Shiva, he's a servant, and Lord Ram can do whatever he wants to do. So, there's two explanations that I've heard, and there's probably more than two. One of them is Ram was, his leela was to instruct in the nature of an ideal king. So an ideal king will offer respect to others, including the demigods. An ideal king will do like that. So he was setting that standard. Not that he was feeling himself dependent, because some people interpret that way, of course, dependent upon the mercy of Lord Shiva. He was setting a standard of, before undertaking some activity, receiving blessings from great personalities that, as ideal kings, should do. But another is, how do Vaishnavas regard Lord Shiva? He's the one who's, one of his services is the protector of the Dham, like in Vrindavan and in Mayapur. He serves that Kshetrapal Shiv function or service. So, seeing in his Leela, seeing Lord Shiva in that way, he was seeking the access to a very difficult service, entering into a very difficult service. As Vaishnavas, Gaudiya Vaishnavas, approach Lord Shiva in a similar way. Those are two explanations that I've heard. And again, there's probably others. Anyone else?
Our eternal, we have, like every soul has eternal relationship with Krishna in different, could be different incarnations. So, like, what happens when we come to the material world? Like it's mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, like the spirit soul is very tiny, like spark. Does the spiritual body gets diminished, or
does the spiritual body get
like shrunk? Or
shrunk? I've never heard that question either. No. The word that Prabhupada used on many occasions was individuality, our spiritual individuality becomes suspended. And then the converse is the spiritual body becomes manifest. So, it's not, the spiritual form is not to be thought of in terms of, you know, inches or feet or yards or meters or miles or something. It's not by material measure that one manifests a spiritual form. It's as a, for example, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the size of the Supersoul is expressed as the size of a thumb. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur provides a commentary where he says, he refers to the Kena Upanishad, I believe, also that speaks like that, where the soul, the super soul, is the size of a thumb. And he says that it's metaphorical language to indicate that one should meditate on the Lord in the heart or of the heart. And since the heart is the size of a thumb, approximately, it's metaphorical language. It's not to be understood that the super soul is the size of a thumb or 6 inches or whatever. That's what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says. It's to give us, you know, something of an idea. So, because at the same time, he's within the heart. You know, what does exactly that mean? If you have a heart transplant, then he stays. Another heart comes in. His super soul is still there. The individual soul is still there. And that same super soul that's within the heart is also within an atom. So, how do we put those two things together? It's not by some material measure, in short. So, when the soul is in the material world, the spiritual form of that soul, just to repeat, is their identity is suspended. The spiritual identity is there, but it's not on a conscious level because the attention is turned elsewhere. But spiritual form and spirit soul, they're eternal. So it's not shrunk. It's suspended. Whatever exactly that means, I can't say. It's suspended. And then we know from the other way around, from Narada's description, at the time that the soul left his body in the previous lifetime, in the previous day of Brahma, as lightning and illumination occur simultaneously, the spiritual form was manifest when the soul left the body. So it was not manifest, at least to his conscious awareness, but spirit soul was manifest at that moment. So it was there, but then manifest, as opposed to unmanifest, different than shrunken. Yes. Wait for the microphone. You're going to speak slow and clear, right? Good.
Thank you, Mark, for this class. Sorry I came late, but how long does it take from a soul when he leaves his body to get a new body?
Prabhupada's teaching is that it's instantaneous. In fact, unless there is the next destination for the soul to go, the soul, the body is in a coma. You've heard of that word, C-O-M-A, coma. Technically, the body is not functioning. But somehow, I don't know how it works medically, the body is not functioning, but some indication of life is still there. I don't know exactly how it works. But it's a condition where they're neither here nor there. And sometimes persons come back to conscious state from a coma, and sometimes they don't. So in that comatose state, Prabhupada explained, that a decision is being made, where's the soul's next destination? Because they can't leave until they have a place to go. They don't, like, go and hang out until there's a place to go. They go to the next place instantly. Okay? Right behind you.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you very much. The process of hearing was discussed.
Yes.
I was wondering about the other processes of devotional service, if they have the same effect as what was discussed in this context.
Yes. They're to be joined with, according to Jiva Goswami, with chanting, or in hearing precedes chanting. So hearing and chanting are connected to the other processes.
I'm remembering, I'm not sure if this is accurate, that the processes are non-different, the processes of devotional service?
They're absolute.
Okay.
And that which is absolute, one can say non-different, but there's difference, even where there's non-difference.
Yeah, okay. Is there, would it be inaccurate to think of one process as more powerful than another? Potent?
Well, hearing and chanting are essential for the others to be effective. Not necessarily more potent. I'm tempted to ask you a question. How does the answer to that question help you advance in Krishna consciousness? Besides, you know, information, it's best if questions are relevant to how one can make progress in Krishna consciousness. Our basic activity, the Bhagavad Dharma process, begins with hearing and chanting, and from that hearing and chanting, the other activities flow, like the deity worship and prayer, and serving the lotus feet and so on. The other processes of bhakti flow from the hearing and chanting. And that's our foundation. And it's not like we want the foundation so we can go to something that's more potent. Foundation stays regardless of whatever else we're doing. And the efficacy of them must be, they must be accompanied with hearing and chanting in order for their efficacy to be experienced by us fully. I mean, imagine deity worship without hearing and chanting, or prayer without hearing and chanting. It's just not effective. But when joined in that way, absolute, of the same absolute nature. We hear in nectar devotion that one can achieve perfection through any one of the processes. So they're equally potent. Jiva Goswami just adds this other elaborate description of they must be joined with chanting. And he gives his reasons why, from scripture. I think that's sufficient. Yeah.
Maharaj, you specifically mentioned the oral reception. Is there a difference between reading or specifically maybe discussing in association of devotees? A different effect, is it?
There's a difference. Reading is not the same as hearing.
Reading is not the same as hearing.
Reading is not the same as hearing. Have you noticed? Yes.
I have one other question, but go Kunanda.
No question. You have a question?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead. I'm running out of time, so I'll just take this one question. I'm going to...
Regarding envy?
Regarding?
Envy.
Envy.
So it is said that by hearing the glories of the Rama or Krishna, one can become free from envy. But my question is that usually when we hear about the glories of someone, we become envious. And also Krishna tells Arjuna that I'm telling you this knowledge because you are not envious of me. So my question is, if there is any previous purification stage to being able to enter into the process of hearing the glories of the Lord in order to overcome envy?
Let's just say this. The potency is there to overcome envy. Shishupal, classic. You know, he overcame his envy by getting killed by Krishna. But what you're saying is true. What you're saying is true. When glories of Krishna are presented, or glories of Krishna's potencies, don't even have to mention Krishna, just the potencies, the all-powerful nature of God, for someone who's envious, they writhe. They're really uncomfortable with all of that. But the potency is there. So if that person becomes envious towards the glories of Krishna, they'll become purified one way or another way. You know, favorable disposition, unfavorable disposition. You know, like, you know, Harinam. Some people like Harinam. Some people don't really like Harinam at all. Some people really hate Harinam. They're getting purified. Just have to make sure we have our permits with us. Is that all right?
Yes. It does connect with the offenses, the nine offenses.
Sure. Oh. Okay. Well, let's take a look at our founder Acharya. He presented Krishna book to the world. And was there risk involved? Sure. When one is preaching, one engages in risk. But what he wanted to do was, not knowing, he told us this, not knowing how long he would live, he wanted to have, to leave behind a rendering of the 10th canto that would eliminate, or let's say minimize, the misinterpretations of, you know, licentious people, especially the rasa dance and other pastimes of Krishna, to give a proper perspective to unqualified people to understand Krishna's pastimes. That was his intent in Krishna book. So, was there a risk of the ninth offense? Yeah. When we engage in book distribution in general. But the purports are given by our founder Acharya, who certainly knows such a tendency is out there in the marketplace. And so, on his behalf, we distribute his literature, presented in such a way that to help diffuse that and help at least give persons the chance to overcome their contamination. But it's a very thoughtful question. Thank you. I'm going to end because I have to leave. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.